Hi there, fellow ocean enthusiast. My name's Lauren and I'm a final year marine biology student at Plymouth University. Welcome to Beneath the Surface. Throughout history, Plymouth has been the starting point for many famous voyages and discoveries, and it acts as a honeypot for marine biologists from all over the world. This podcast is where we have conversations and tell the stories of local people and people further afield that dedicate their lives to the ocean. We're going to be speaking to scientists, divers, photographers, artists, students, you name it, just sharing our love for the ocean and discussing current topics within the field of marine biology, all while having a little bit of fun along the way. So, let's get going. So hi everyone, I'm here with Tors Froud, who is the Engagement and Inclusion Manager for the National Marine Park here in Plymouth. Hi Tors, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Very excited to be here today, so thank you very much for inviting me.
No, that's okay. I'm really, really happy to get you on because when I met you a few months ago, I was just really excited. As soon as I met you, I was like, right, I want you on the podcast. So I just wanted to talk about, first of all, what a marine park actually is. Because we know that we've got one here in Plymouth and it's the first in the UK. Mm-hmm. What does that actually mean?
The easiest analogy for most people locally is it's a Dartmoor, but in the sea. So it's a national marine park, but based in the water. However, when you actually break it down and actually look at the details of it, it's way more than that. And actually, we're taking on board a lot more than just a basic national, a land-based park. So actually, we've got different themes and different trends and different patterns and different strands that we're looking at. So education, absolutely, because obviously we need to tell people about the marine park and what's actually in it, on it, under it, near it. Mm-hmm. So education is one of our strands. Conservation, obviously yourself, obviously at university, you're very conscious that we have, thanks to people like David Attenborough and the Blue Planet, we are now raising a generation of ocean and admirers and understanders. So part of what we're doing is conservation. So the planting of the seagrass, the kelp weed, you know, kelp beds, etc.
Yeah.
But actually, the reason we're doing it as well. So we're not there proclaiming to people, don't do this, don't. We're actually telling people how to get involved in proactive conservation.
I was going to say, I bet those two strands sort of overlap a lot because they come hand in hand. Yeah. And
and I think that's one of our key factors is the fact that we do have this ocean generation, the generation ocean of children that are coming up through that, you know, are going to be sat where you are in 5-10 years time. And they are going to be, you know, the scientists and the advocates of the future for the sea. So that's one of our other threads and strands. We've also got commerce. I think a lot of people think that because we've got the conservation element, we therefore wouldn't be encouraging businesses or commerce and the maritime industry.
Yeah.
We are. We know that every single tanker and ship that comes in with any freight is keeping it off the road. So actually, when you look at the carbon amounts, the tonnage that's actually kept off the road by coming in via ship, it is phenomenal. It's such a green thing to actually have the shipping port that we have here.
So I've never thought about that before.
Yeah, and again, we've got the free port now. So we're working really closely with a lot of the different harbour masters. And when they show you what can be taken off the road and the rail, and put onto a tanker and put onto a ship and brought into Plymouth, it really is incredible. And how diverse it is, and you know, it's really something that we are encouraging and we are promoting. But also the Navy, we obviously, you know, we can't turn around and do anything in Plymouth without, you know, the backing of the port and the port authorities. So again, everything that we've just said about conservation, we're also doing with the Navy's backing, and obviously the Royal Navy and the MOD down here, big employers as well. So it's trying to promote that. The other part of it is almost career aspirations. So as much as, you know, we can sit here and we can talk about the marine life and what's under the water, we've also got an internationally acclaimed maritime industry. You know, what's produced in Plymouth, the think tanks, the not just necessarily, you know, the autonomous boats that can, you know, go across the Atlantic, but actually actually the thinking behind it, which links beautifully to SailGP, which is obviously here this weekend as well. But giving people the aspirations that they can have a career in the maritime business.
Yeah.
And it can be very well paid. And you do not have to leave Plymouth to do it. You know, you can have that career aspirations here without having to go up to London or without having to go abroad. So that's another one of our elements.
Kind of keeping talent here.
Yeah, really, yeah. So we don't have that brain drain. So we don't lose, you know, we're Plymouth has now got three universities. You know, we're really a neutral city. We're a small city, but we've got three universities here.
Yeah.
So why would we allow this future capacity to give us the answers to a lot of our issues? Why would we allow them to leave? Let's keep them here. Let's keep them employed here with all the positives of living in Britain's ocean city, which is really, really exciting.
Well, yeah, that's what we were talking about before, wasn't it? About the Plymouth bug. Once you're here, you don't want to leave. And I think I do want to go away and travel and everything, but I do eventually want to come back. The only thing that will be potentially stopping that will be where the jobs are.
Yep. And the finance involved in it.
Yeah.
Completely. And I think that's something that we are very lucky here, especially with the announcements of the Freeport down here now. We are looking at how to capture and to keep that ability to actually maintain as an employer and an employee, you know, to maintain people within the region, especially with remote working, the capabilities now that we have post-COVID. So that's something else that we're really quite passionate about within the National Marine Park. But also the recreation side of things.
Yeah.
So getting people, absolutely, yes, getting people on, near, under and in the water. But we were also very aware, you don't have to get wet to enjoy the sea. And I think, you know, we're looking at things like mental health. We're looking at things like post-COVID and some of the trends that we have down here for people getting engaged with the water during lockdowns and post-COVID are phenomenal. You know, when you look at paddleboard sales, for example, any equipment to do with paddleboards or paddleboard sales went up by 3,000% during lockdown. Same for personal watercraft. But actually, so did open water swimming. You know, there was a Guardian report down here, or a base down here, that said open water swimming went up by 300%. Now, anybody could walk across the Hoe or Firestone Bay or Mountbatten and see that actually I think it's way more than 300%.
Yeah,
but also, absolutely. You know, on a bad day, do you go and sit on the beach? Do you just go and sit up on the Hoe? Do you sit at Jennycliff or over at Mount Edgecombe or Whitsands or wherever locally and just look at the sea? And what does that do for people? And the smell of the ocean and the tactility of the ocean. And I've done most of my thinking sat on beaches, touching shingle.
Yeah.
And I've almost kind of like kept a pebble from every beach that I've gone to where there's been a significant period in my life that I've sat there and, you know, rubbed a pebble and kind of gone, right, actually, this is the path I'm going to go now. So for me, it's so important not just to get wet, and we can promote people. You know, we've just been talking about your diving course that you've just qualified in, and you know, I'm very watery as well, but actually some people don't ever want to get wet.
No, my mum's one of them, but she's quite happy just sitting near the beach, just looking, watching my brother in the water. She doesn't want to go near it, but it's just as good going on a walk or anything.
Yeah.
I love open water swimming. I got the bug over a year ago, I think, and I went all year round in a swimming costume, and I loved it. I don't know what it is about it. And I actually said to my friend, it must be. I said to my friend, and she did it when we were younger, I said, I can't see the appeal. Why would you get in the cold water? I don't see anything good about it. And then here I am, and she's like, ha.
I think it is. It's that we live in such busy lives, and I think COVID taught us to slow down a little bit and to value what was important. And I did work all the way through COVID, so I've had friends that either worked solidly or any of my peer group, that some of them were on furlough.
Yeah.
And again, I think it was that having time to reassess. And I think going back post-COVID for most of us to go back into the workplace again, it's if you can add in, sometimes you're only in the water for 10 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's even that second for me, and possibly for you as well, that second that you just submerge. And, you know, I'm not precious about my appearance or my hair, but even I have no intention to get my hair wet every single time I go in the water because I don't want to have to wash it, etc. And I do every single time because I know I'm going to duck dive while I'm in there. And again, I think it's almost that, it's going to sound really cringy and really cliched, but almost coming out of the water, it's not baptism, it's not reborn. It's just giving yourself the opportunity just to escape.
Like a reset sort of thing,
I think. It's just given that, you know, I'm a single mum. I've got a really full-on job for me, and my children swim with me. But sometimes it's just a case of just me by myself. Or if you are swimming and you swim with peers, you don't have to talk to anybody because you've got that shared experience. So, but I can get that from rock pooling, or I can get that from paddleboarding, or I can get that from just sitting on the beach, or just driving up to Jennycliff sometimes and just looking out across the sand.
It's a nice sunset at Jennycliff. So, exactly, I've done that before, just pulled up in the car park. It's beautiful.
So yeah, no, I think we need to, I know mental health's a bit of a buzzword. I think post-COVID everybody's talking a lot about mental health, but I think I do actually think it's really positive that people are actually highlighting it now. Yeah. And Plymouth, unfortunately, is one of the water suicide hotspots of the country. So I think water for some people is that reset, but water for some people is their escape. And I think it's trying to bridge that gap between what you go there for and what answers or what peace it can give you that I think we really need to focus on with regards to the mental health aspect of it and the blue mind and the blue health. And just to me, it's that switch off from digital presence. And you know, I'm sat here talking to you now and I've got my personal phone and my work phone, you know.
Yeah, it's overwhelming, isn't it, beside sometimes?
Me. Yeah, exactly. And I think it's that kind of, for me personally, I do use it as an escape, definitely, anything on the water or near the water. So, but some people don't, but my job is to kind of allow people to utilize it and get access to it if they want to.
Yeah, and that's really important, to be honest, because I think if you've not necessarily been around the sea, you don't, I mean, when I came to uni, I lived basically landlocked, so I didn't really know what was in the rock pools. Mm. I didn't really know anything about open water swimming. I was always kind of swimming on holiday and things, but it's a bit different swimming on holiday and then coming here and swimming in January.
Yeah.
It was all kind of new, but then somehow found my way through with different, with the Rockpool Project, swimming with people just at Tinside. Yeah. You slowly get there, and it's I feel like you don't go back once you start.
I think you're right, but you were saying that, you know, with your mum as well, you always need that kind of element of, we've just been doing some surveys, so there's a massive survey going out at the moment for across all the park users, and this QR code, it will take you into 13 or 14 questions, takes a whole 4 minutes to answer it.
Okay.
And some of these surveys, well, basically it's based on what I'm going to be writing for my report for Heritage Lottery Fund, who obviously funded the National Marine Park. And when I've been looking at some of these surveys, and all of the questions in this survey are scientifically based.
Okay.
We've changed the language to make them accessible to everybody. So you could be, you know, a professor at the university, or literally a 13-year-old child that's come down and jump in, you know, off by waterfront, and you should be able to access these questions.
Brilliant.
And again, it's almost looking at what the park gives to you and what you want from the park. And it's opinion based, which is quite interesting for a scientific survey. But actually it's been fascinating. You know, it's my job to look through all these responses, and obviously the data will, you know, will come out, but it's every time I, you know, I sit down there every day just having a look through what people's perspectives are of the water. And I think that's what's so wonderful, is that, you know, with British Ocean City, worryingly 54% of the city can't swim.
Yeah, I have seen quite a few different swimming groups and stuff, absolutely, which is brilliant.
Which is fantastic.
But it's scary because we live on top of the sea. But I have seen, I think it's Ace Swimming or something like that at Firestone. And they've got different levels, so they cater to like beginners, and I'm talking beginners scared of the water,
in the tidal pool,
and then in the tidal pool, and then take them all the way to the advanced group where they're doing, I've seen them swim before, back and forward to the buoy, quick as anything. You can barely see them, they're so quick.
And I think that's what's so lovely about it down here, and obviously not just from a local's perspective, but obviously anybody that was visiting, the visitor experience as well. So Jason from Ace Swimming is actually selling that on Visit Plymouth. So he's actually, you know, any of the cruise ships that come in or anybody that comes down, there's now a National Marine Park collection on Visit Plymouth, so you can actually take part in the different elements, including things like an open water swimming session, including your paddleboarding, which is obviously quite prolific down at Firestone Bay, including rock pooling, because the rock pool project's on there. Shout out to Alan and the team.
Love Alan and the team.
So it's people. I think it's what's so amazing about working for the Marine Park is the vastness of it. That's not even the geographical size of it, because actually, as far as a Heritage Lottery Fund project goes, we are big, you know, we are covering a big area. And I think, if we'd have been sat here and we were just talking about Tinside, and we could talk about the coves, and we could talk about, you know, the diversity in what Tinside could be used for. And we've obviously got Sail GP this weekend, so we've got the Live and the Lido sessions, which is the music gigs.
Yeah, that's quite new, isn't it?
This is new. This is the first year they've ever done it. So you've got the open air cinema coming back in August and September in the Lido.
So
they've just had STEM GP down here, so we've had 400 school children going through and actually looking at different careers within the marine and the maritime industries. So, you know, we could sit here and talk about the Lido in itself, but that's actually only one of the gateways of the marine park. We've actually got four physical gateways and a digital gateway that we're actually trying to incorporate. So I think that the vastness of the park, not just for locals but for visitors both and internationally, is, you know, we are trying to do something that no other marine park in the world has done.
Yeah.
So most marine parks are actually conservation based, end of, you know, with education as well, but they don't incorporate the recreation, the commerce, you know, the aspirational for careers.
The more holistic.
Yeah, the approach that we were actually going for.
I think it's amazing, the live sessions at the Lido that you were talking about, because that's completely different to...
Anything.
Yeah. Incorporating the sort of nightlife, alcohol and stuff, right near the sea and stuff. It's amazing.
And again, the guys that we're working with from down there, so Danship and REM Productions, so we're working with local companies. It's, you know, some of them are linked to the Treasury.
Yeah.
We spoke to them about their environmental impact assessment. We were talking about single-use plastic. They've got a plastic-free Plymouth pledge. So basically, they have brought in now a particular cup called a biotransformation cup, which is starch-based.
Amazing.
And so instantly, we've got an event happening near the water. They have lifeguards there. You're not allowed in the pool, so lifeguards would quickly get you out again because
to be
there's
fair,
alcohol
and water
involved.
Don't
exactly,
mix,
they don't
to be
mix.
Fair.
But again, these guys, they're trialling this out. This is the first year they've ever done it. And, you know, they've put gazebos up, which they're then allowing yoga sessions to happen the following morning under the gazebos.
Oh.
You know, and almost this, I think it's something like Tinside, which can only be used generally from May until September, is now showing the scope that actually it's not just a pool for the season. It could be a pool all year round for different things. And I think that's a really, you know, wonderful opportunity, and the park has instigated conversations and allowed forward thinking and allowed blue sky thinking to an extent. And
blue sky thinking,
just looking up to the sky going, what can we do next? What daydream
I've never heard that
before. No, blue sky thinking, it's like, what daydream could we actually make happen? We have the same over at the Mountbatten Centre, which is another one of our gateways. So the Tinside gateway is the well-being hub. So again, bringing it down, you know, things like the yoga, things like socialising, things like not just the swimming and the swimming lessons, but utilising that area for much more. We've got Mountbatten Centre, which is the recreation hub, because obviously they do have the facilities there. Then, and they're so fortunate there that actually, depending on the weather, the wind conditions and the wind strength and direction, they can actually launch from Batten Beach or up the River Plym.
Okay,
so
amazing.
They've actually got quite a lot of adaptability for the weather. But they've got indoor climbing walls. They've got the artillery tower. They've got things to
I
do.
I didn't know they had climbing walls there.
Indoor climbing wall there. And also, you know, they host BZAC, they host In Deep, they host, you know, the Catwater Gig guys, they host Port of Plymouth Canoeing Association. There's, you know, it's a proper hub of activity over there. So again, and people don't necessarily go over to Mountbatten, and, you know, Mountbatten is a place that you really could pack up a picnic and be there for the day. There's so much to do on the peninsula.
It's the best place for rock pooling.
Yes,
Mountbatten Beach on
very
a low
good.
Tide.
Oh, it's perfect.
I went there on the lowest tide of the year, and we saw some amazing things. It's just, it's a brilliant beach. I think it's the best one in Plymouth for rock pooling.
I was going to say, I know the Rock Pool Project, you know, do like it within those areas, because obviously the coral was found at Firestone, wasn't there? Wasn't there coral found last year at Firestone? I'm sure there was a social media post I read on that.
That must have slipped through the net.
Yeah,
I didn't hear that one.
I think there's I think Alan was very excited about it at one stage, but I think I think that's what's so lovely, because part of what we're doing is signposting.
Yeah.
So one of our other Gateways is National Marine Aquarium. So okay. They're our education partners. So obviously the Ocean Conservation Trust, the OCT, which is the charity that's within, they rent the space in the National Marine Aquarium. These are the guys that are coming out with some fantastic pilot projects.
They do the Remedies project.
They do, and they're linked to Remedies as well. So obviously there's lots of different elements of funding, but it's very confusing. Trying to get my head around who's paying for what. obviously the marine park's being paid for by a 9.5 million pounds fund from the Heritage Lottery Fund. So thank you very much to anybody who ever buys a lottery ticket, because you're allowing us to kind of roll with this program.
I tell you what, that has been me and all the people on the HSE course for the past month. Every other day we're doing a syndicate.
But please let us win.
Yeah, shout out to Mick for initiating the syndicate. You're paying for the marine park.
Yeah, thank you very much. Come down and see us anytime. So I think, again, you know, having the, you know, they're trialling out a education program to 27 Key Stage 2 schools, or 27 Key Stage 2 classes, sorry, from September. And it's trialling out two or three different ideas with every class to see what works. And we all, you know, we know habit forming doesn't happen overnight. You have to encourage somebody to do things over and over again, to make them familiar, to make them comfortable, to make them confident.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is why a lot of, you know, there's over 100 schools in Plymouth looking at primary and secondary schools together. Mm-hmm. But actually, we're focusing this on a 27 target, you know, some targeted and some open core schools to actually take part. And I think that's going to be, children have no filter when it comes to honest feedback and constructive criticism.
Yeah, they're probably the best people to go to for that.
They will tell you what they think. And I think this is what's so wonderful for us, is that if something doesn't work, we will hear it. And we're in this something called a test and trial phase at the moment. So we're in the developmental phase of the National Marine Park, because what we are trialing has never been done before. This Horizons project, we have time now to the Big Blue Splash last weekend, for example, this mass activation across four different sites.
Yeah, can we talk about that a little bit? Because that was a fantastic event. I had the time of my life. I was getting my face painted, loving it. Can you?
It was. See, these are, we have two different elements here. We've got different strands of people. You have, very generically, the mobilised. So the mobilised are you and I. Yep. Mobilised are people that can get to the water. We can try things out. We're quite happy to try things out. We might have our own wetsuit or jelly shoes or sunglasses or swimsuit, and we can give things a go. But we don't necessarily know how to. So on that front, something like the Big Blue Splash weekend was amazing, because it was giving people the opportunity. Everything was booked through Eventbrite. So if you've got a smartphone or if you've got social media, you could book onto as many different free activities as you wanted, and gave people a go. So we had people down in Tinside Lido doing SUP yoga.
I saw that. I don't fancy that.
It was amazing. It's such good fun. It's really,
really
good. It
looked good, but I'm not convinced. It was a paddleboard and yoga is a good mix for me.
It was all anchored down. It was, and Jade, who was running that with Southwest SUP down there, I think people were flabbergasted by what they could actually achieve, and she got people going headstands in the middle dock.
I saw them.
It was incredible. It was so, so good.
I was quite happy watching. Just watching. As we were talking about before, they were getting themselves into bendy positions.
All sorts of warrior poses and happening.
I know.
And again, they do that in the sea. They've never done it before in the pool. So we trialled it out in the pool a couple of months ago, going, well, you know, do you reckon we can give this a go? And people who, again, the barrier from getting involved in it would be the fact that they didn't want to go to sea to do it, could do it in the pool. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that, again, that element of signposting. So this Big Blue Splash weekend was an activation across Mountbatten, Firestone Bay, Mount Edgecombe and Tinside Lido and Cove. And it was a case of like, come on, you know, people of Plymouth, visitors, anybody. There was minimum ages on some things, no maximum age. You didn't have to swim. We could have had, there was buoyancy aids available for you to have taken part in. Just encouraging people to give it a go. So it was a proper give it a go event.
Yeah.
Now, separate to that, we had something called mini splashes.
Mini splashes?
And the mini splashes were the lead in to the Big Blue. We know that if there's a particular group of individuals who don't engage with the water, so as I described us as the mobilised, you've then got different people who either for cultural reasons, religious reasons, social economic, so unfortunately the financial reasons, could be infrastructure, they don't know how to get to the beach, could be logistics that you've got three children, and actually they're all different ages and some of them aren't old enough. It was like, how do we get these people engaged? How do we say to them, come along and have give it a go? So we tried some mini splashes, and basically we targeted particular groups of people. I'm very fortunate with my background. I'm running a project called Making Waves Together Project, which started from Sport England about 4 years ago.
Is that the big sign when you come into Plymouth, the wave?
Well, I would love to take credit for that.
Is that the same?
When it got put up, everybody was like, look, Making Waves has been like acknowledged. Unfortunately, it was nothing to do with Making Waves, but I'm taking credit for it.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's based on Gdynia and the Polish people that actually live in Plymouth, and it was actually their support of us in the war, and it was all linked down to the heritage side of things. But I will take credit for that.
Yeah, take credit.
It's a lovely sign. It makes me smile every time I see it.
I know, me too.
So we had these community groups that I'd worked with previously, and I knew to kind of give them a nod and say, look, I'm trialing this out. Would you be my guinea pigs? Mm-hmm. So we worked with Kiam Sparks, so the Kiam community, which was working with the Kiam policing team that were put into place after the tragedy last year.
Yeah.
Which these guys are just terrific, because the police get involved with the children and the scouting groups. So you've got children that might have witnessed a horrific event, and actually you've broken down their barriers and allowed them to laugh and allowed them to have some really positive experiences.
Yeah, absolutely. That's important.
So we worked with Mountbatten Centre, worked with these guys, and we had them over sailing, kayaking, paddleboarding,
anything
boating,
and everything. Just sounds amazing.
Anything.
And you don't know, because for them that could get them into it in the future.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. So we had a big group of children coming back with the police every day for that, which was incredible. Over at Firestone Bay, we trialled a new event, and they did paddleboarding in the morning with Southwest SUP.
Mm-hmm.
The Firestone Shack fed them at lunchtime, and then they went rock pooling in the afternoon.
Oh,
so again, amazing. It was a package, and they'd never... Southwest SUP and the Rockpool Project have never worked together creating packages before, particularly. So we were like, right, can we feed people as well? So we worked with the Rockpool Project and the community of PL1 to encourage them to take part in this.
Yeah.
Which again was with really honest feedback, what worked, what didn't, for example. And then the third one we did, which was based in Tinside, Lido, was working with Hope Refugee Group, which
wow.
are based on Union Street.
Yeah.
So they're in the plot on Union Street. And we basically said, right, okay, we've got this event, would you come down? And we had them down for 4 weeks consecutively on a Tuesday after the pool shut. So we had exclusive rights to Tinside Lido.
Mm-hmm.
The first week they did snorkeling with the team from the aquarium, the OCT team.
Nice.
And a lot of them couldn't swim, but of course you can put a snorkel mask on and a snorkel and put your face under the water, sat on the steps in the shallow end.
Yeah, yeah.
So we
absolutely.
Had 16 children screaming with delight because they, you know, their underwater eyes, they could see under
they
the water.
That's crazy.
Which was just, some of these children had witnessed trauma to do with water. Some
right.
of them were from Syria. Some of them had come over from Ukraine. They'd witnessed, again, quite a lot of trauma. So it was actually lovely to give them an experience. A lot of the parents, all the community support workers were sat on the side just smiling, because the laughter from the children was amazing.
Yeah.
The lifeguards
give them
were incredible
a positive
down there.
Connotation.
Yeah, yeah. And again, that link
yeah.
to water that could actually be a happy memory, not a horrific memory, as some of them actually had. So second week we did paddleboard yoga with them.
Oh gosh.
Which was hilarious.
How did it go?
Again, really, really well. But again, they didn't know what a paddleboard was. So we had some of them taking part in paddleboard yoga, and I was stood actually in the shallow end with a paddleboard, and they were going, well, what do we do? And I said, well, see if you can stand up or just lay on it. And they'd never seen a paddleboard before.
Yeah.
So that was just, you know, and children in the water, even in the shallow end, not out of their depth. Some of them were wearing wetsuits, some of them were wearing buoyancy aids, but they let themselves go. So the first week we started with 16 children. It ended up at 32 the second week.
Wow.
Third week we had a play session. And we just put woggles and footballs in the water, and the adults were getting involved as well.
It doesn't take much, does it? I remember us being a kid, and we used to get like pool noodles what are they called? The things you lie on, what are they called?
Oh, like the Lilos.
Lilos, and making total wipeout courses
yeah,
and just
exactly.
anything and everything. It doesn't matter as long as you're jumping in.
And I think that was it. And I think, you know, a lot of them were started off. There was one little girl that I worked with quite a lot, and some of the other volunteers in the Ranger Service worked with, and she was screaming when she was kind of like piggybacking with us when we were in the shallow end. And she was, at one stage, she screamed because she thought she was going to drown. Now, she came every week for the 4 weeks. By the fourth week, we actually did scuba diving the fourth week with sound diving.
Yeah.
And she was in the pool, laying on a mat, but on top of the pool with her face in the water, breathing from an air tank.
Wow.
And that to me is, that child has, over those 4 weeks, knowing that, you know, she had come from the Ukraine, knowing that she was now welcome in Plymouth, and also this child was laughing, and you can tell a child laughing, or a child that's putting on a laugh. She laughed with every bone in her body, you know, her eyes were genuinely smiling, and
yeah,
I think
that's the difference, isn't it?
Yeah, and we were feeding these children at the end of every day as well, because a lot of them were socially economically needing that. And I think the fact that she was coming every week and going home with a bag of food, that she was eating on the way home, she
after
was
a nice just, day as well, yeah. And to
and this
see
is a child that came
over
with no swimming costume.
Weeks.
We literally had to go and buy. We went to the charity shops and got loads and loads of different kinds of swimming costumes, which kind of led us. You know, one of the other ideas that we're going to have, hopefully starting this year, but definitely going into next year, is a sea library that possibly you can use your library card for, and come and borrow a wetsuit or jelly shoes, or, you know, you're talking about noodles and armbands, or something like that. And I think, you know, we've got children outgrow things. You know, I've got two, and, you know, it's great if, you know, the eldest can be passed to the youngest, and then what do you do with it? Do you pass it on to somebody else? Well, actually, we're saying that you could donate any of your old beach gear or your old watery stuff, and actually allow people that either haven't got the capability of drying it, they might live in a flat, they haven't got the opportunity to dry a wetsuit, or people that don't actually have access to swimming costumes or goggles or, you know, flippers or a snorkel mask or, you know, things like that. So we're actually talking about almost the renewal and the reusing and the recycling. It's very much green in the blue.
Yeah, it kind of encompasses everything, doesn't it? It's the conservation side,
education,
recreation, getting people, it's everything. Yeah. That's so amazing, because I've got so many wetsuits at home from when I was younger, just little short ones that you know, you might just buy at a service station when you're going somewhere.
Yeah.
And I've got a few of them and they don't fit anymore, but it's like, I don't want to get rid of them.
Yeah,
so maybe I'll bring them.
That'd be amazing. Yeah, they can be used. Yes, please. So we're looking at the theory of almost like a swap shop kind of thing as well, and
that's,
you know, you've
idea.
Got like the vintage and all the different kind of, you know, clothing ones, but actually we want to trial doing something for the sea,
because it's so expensive. All of the equipment is expensive, so that's amazing.
So this is something that we're thinking of. Well, hopefully we're looking at the logistics of getting it trialed out, so this is going to be something that hopefully we'll roll out if we don't get it this year's on plan. It's on the radar to get it all sorted, but definitely for next year, this is something that we want to have, like pop-up swap shops or pop-up sea library.
That's
where
amazing.
You can actually come along and actually just borrow things.
Is there anything like that? Have you heard of that anywhere else?
Never, because we've Marcus at Southwest SUP, working with a water safety initiative called Wave After Wave, which is happens to be Jason, Marcus and myself. We managed to get some funding last year to buy some buoyancy aids.
Nice.
So we've done almost like a bowling shoes thing. You can go down to the shack at Firestone, leave something. It could be your car keys, which is brilliant because we can look after your car keys for you, or it could be, you know,
that's a double whammy.
Something exactly.
Yeah.
And you get to borrow a buoyancy aid, which then gets fitted by an instructor. So if we're talking about barriers being broken down and some people are less water confident, it could be that you're only going rock pooling, but you want to wear a buoyancy aid, or into the tidal pool down at Tinside, or out on a paddleboard, or you're going for a swim and you can borrow this. So the kind of the idea of the sea library really was instigated by Marcus going to Real Ideas and Pop and kind of getting this money to buy buoyancy aids.
Yeah, it's a brilliant idea, which, actually, kind of leaving things and renting
water
it.
Safety, especially for us down here. You know, we're the busiest coastal lifeboat station in the country.
Yeah,
the only busier one than us overall is Tower in London. So, you know, we have more shouts out than anything else. If we can be loaning out or giving out phone pouches and loaning out buoyancy aids, are we going to help those volunteers?
Floats as well? Do you have the
not yet, but we are. That's another thing that we're thinking of. It's almost, you know, the swimming hats and the floats, because again,
the floats are brilliant.
We were so fortunate a couple of years ago that the Cattwater Harbour Commissioner, the Harbour Master Richard Allen, gave us a grant of £500 to buy floats and hats, and we gave them to the community down at Firestone Bay, because even though, again, that's not his patch, it's not his area, it's one water. Mm-hmm. So he's very keen on promoting water safety, and I think, again, it's that link to seeing what we were doing, that Richard actually said, right, you know, I need you to apply for this because I think you actually have got the right incentives and the right idea by encouraging people to do something like sustainably swimming in the sea, which we've just been obviously talked about, but it's free.
That's a big one.
If you can get to the sea, it's not paying money to go into a pool, unfortunately, which, you know, we the pools in Plymouth are great, like the Life Centre and the Lido and Mount Wise pool, which is obviously a free pool anyway, but they can cost. And if you're taking, if you're a family or if you're a couple and you want to go for a swim, it's going to cost you money.
Well, you know what? I had this conversation with somebody at the Blue Splash event. It was one of my friends, and I said, I can't understand why people would go swimming in the Lido instead of the sea. And then when I said it, I thought, actually, some people are scared of the sea, and the Lido gives them the experience of being near the water, but they're in a confined place with a lifeguard. And once I said it, I was like, that's actually really stupid.
Nail on the head.
But now, I guess, if you can, you're bridging that gap, you're giving the buoyancy aids out, letting people go into the sea, you'll see more
familiarisation.
Yes, absolutely.
Think, you know, we are, again, logistically, we're looking at, we've got 5 bathing areas in Plymouth, and we've got no beach lifeguards. This is something else that we're really looking at, seeing what we can do, because we're encouraging people, come to Britain's, you know, the UK's first marine park, come to Plymouth Sound. Yeah, actually, the lifeguards are pool-based, they're not sea-based lifeguards. You know, the nearest lifeguarded beaches for us are Big Bree, Shalabar or Whitsands, depending on which direction you go
in.
Yet we know that there's lifeguards in Plymouth. We need to, it's a different kind of beach, you know, when you kind of think of your Baywatch, and for anybody over a certain age, it's David Hasselhoff on a nice sandy beach.
We don't have
those beaches in Plymouth. But we have shingle beaches, but it's a different kind of lifeguarding that's needed.
Right.
And we are working really closely with Steve Instance from the RNLI, and also Swim England and Swim Safe. So to bring that element of water safety to Plymouth, because I think that's paramount as well. I think we don't want to encourage people to the water's edge without telling them about the shipping lanes, you know, without telling them about the currents and the tides and onshore and offshore winds. And I think it'd be immoral for us to say, come down and get in the water without talking to people about water safety.
Yeah, you have got to be quite honest about it. And I think, as you said, everyone's buying paddle boards and everything like that. I bought one myself after I finished my exams. I thought, I wanted one for ages. I'm going to get one. But I'm still a bit hesitant because I don't really know about the shipping lanes properly and the rules. And I'm going to go for a lesson with the people first, learn it all, because I just don't want to get in the position where I'm stuck out there or I'm getting in the way of a boat. And that is important because it is all fun and games, but you've got to be sort of serious about it.
Plymouth's got the most buoyage of any port in England or the UK, possibly. And again, I think, you know, you say to anybody on a beach, oh, what does that, you know, green mark mean, or what does that red mark mean? And they won't know.
Yeah.
You know, what does that yellow and black mark mean? They won't know. They need to know about cardinal marks. They need to know about the shipping lanes. And I think my recommendation, and I'm actually a paddleboard instructor as well, but my recommendation to anybody is to have a lesson.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of the lessons where you have, you know, and there's different schools popping up now. You've obviously got the Mountbatten Centre. You do have Southwest SUP. There's Ocean City Adventure and Ocean City Paddle. These guys will, if you say to them, right, I've bought a paddle board, where is safe for me to go paddling?
Yeah.
When is safe for me to go paddling? They will tell you the apps to put on your phone. They will tell you the kit that you need. They will, and, you know, there are Facebook groups. Be careful of the community groups because they're not necessarily risk assessed or insured. So it could be a little bit like a Wikipedia element. I know for as a student, you're very aware that anybody can give advice on these things.
Yeah, you've got to. It's so more pick, opinions yeah, and personal experiences. Yeah. Pick and choose what
so
you
I
read.
So I would definitely go for an accredited school. And again, just say to them, you know, I've bought a board and I want some advice. And even if you haven't bought a board yet, they will give you an advice on where to get a board from. Because unfortunately, the middle aisle of some certain supermarkets that are selling boards, and they're selling boards without leashes. They're selling,
really?
Yeah, they're selling boards that are something called a single skinned board, which don't go up to a high PSI. These are called banana boards. So when you're stood on them, they bend in the middle. Now, these boards are the most dangerous of paddle boards that you can get.
I didn't know
because
that.
Because they're so cheap and cheerful.
Middle littles.
Yeah, you've got to be careful of middle little aisles. And unfortunately, it's the prominence is that more and more people are buying this kind of board because they got a paddle board for less than £100.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, though, if they're not buying a buoyancy aid with it, if they don't come with leashes, and if they're a paddle board... can be a killer. You know, if you're going in, it can be anything. It's people are very quick to jump on personal watercraft jet skis and saying, oh, they're really bad. Loads of people bought jet skis during lockdown, but we've got 3 jet ski schools in Plymouth, so you can get accredited in jet skis.
I wish more people would go and get lessons in things like jet skis, speed boats as well.
Oh, completely.
Paddle boarding, because I don't know, I as a diver,
oh, yeah,
it worries me that people don't know what an A-flag is.
No, yeah.
It's worrying because jet skis, you don't want to be coming up and then getting hit by a jet ski. I'm sorry. I don't want to put
things. No.
But I just wish people would because it's so worrying that people can just get a jet ski and then go.
Give it a go. And I think, I mean, we've had incidents in the Cattwater where, you know, swimmers have been hit by paddleboarders.
Yeah.
You know, where we've had, you know, jet ski versus speedboat. We've had, you know, jet ski versus paddleboarder. We've had, I think... You know, as much as we're saying come and utilise the water, we are a community. People are here because they want to reap the benefits of it, whether it's physical, whether it's mental, whether it's social, and obviously business and commerce wise as well. And I think we just need to, there needs to be an understanding and appreciation of each of the different groups. And I think it's that element of mutual understanding.
Yeah.
I get a lot of people messaging me going, oh, there's a jet ski coming through the you know, the swimming marks at the moment, and they're coming to the shore. They're allowed. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's a bathing area. It doesn't mean it's a no-go zone area for anybody else. It just means that they have to really reduce their speed. And again, if swimmers recognize that people are allowed through to that area, similarly to the guys coming through the area, that actually if you go within the swim zone, you have to reduce your speed majorly. And again, I think it's just that awareness. But the problem that we've got is, we can't make people have a license to go on the water. It's very down to people's perceptions to get their own qualifications.
Mm-hmm.
We do police the area through MOD, the police, through QHM and DQHM, as well as the pilot boats and different harbour commissions around. But I do think it's a personal responsibility. I think people have to be prepared to know that, you know, something can hurt other people on the water, so we need to be aware of it.
Yeah, no, I didn't know there was so much to the marine park, to be honest. I feel like all day, all week. It's really interesting. I just wanted to touch a little bit on how you got this job, because I think lots of people will be listening and think, wow, this is a dream job. You are part of this amazing thing. Mm-hmm. You're putting on an event. How did you get here?
I'm actually a geography teacher, so
wasn't expecting that.
So I did 18 years teaching at Tavistock College.
Okay.
So in the middle of Dartmoor. So as far away from obviously the coast as you can get from down here, really. So taught for 18 years. Always had the passion for the water personally. You know, I'm Cornish, so I grew up near the water, and it's very prolific in my family and in my life. I got to the stage of teaching where unfortunately a lot of teachers have got to, there wasn't enough Horlicks in the world to help me sleep at night because it became very data driven. It wasn't about the individual student, and I am a very empathetic, passionate person when it comes to things, and
I can tell that.
I didn't like the drive to get children through GCSEs and A-levels to their detriment. Which I had issues with. So I decided, with the support of my family, to quit teaching.
Okay.
So I actually handed my notice in the February with nothing to go into, which was really...
That must have been scary.
It was very scary. I'd also just turned 40, so it was almost like this is my midlife crisis kind of thing.
I think it's amazing that you decided to do that, though.
Yeah.
It's because it's brave.
Yeah, very.
Lots of people probably would have just thought, I'm going to suck it up.
I did, as then again, I think I had qualifications in different water sports, things like that. So I thought, well, if need be, I'll just become an instructor or outdoor ed, and, you know, instructor or temping or supply teaching, or I just needed a change of scene to do with teaching, which was unfortunate. So then, lo and behold, a Sport England job was being advertised to project manage a Making Waves Together project, which was a project for families in PL1 and PL2 that could see the sea, but they could never engage with the sea. So I was basically, as a geography teacher as well, when I'd led expeditions to Iceland or, you know, ski trips, and I think everything you do when you're a geography teacher, especially for field trips, is like mini project managing. So I thought, can I give this a go?
Yeah.
I went through the rigmarole for the interviews and got the job, and it became the most successful Sport England project in the country for its cohort.
Wow.
We bucked so many trends about who we were getting engaged and who we were getting involved, and just absolutely loved it.
Mm-hmm.
The project was a pilot project, so it came to a close with Sport England, but we managed to keep it going sustainably by getting funding from people like Children in Need and the RWA Tackling Inequality Fund. And it was basically adopted under the umbrella by Mountbatten Centre. So the project carried on going,
yep,
but on a much smaller scale. So I actually returned to teaching. So I went back into geography teaching, and I got a position in Heels School at Plympton,
mm-hmm,
which was an incredible school. I became the director of enrichment and extracurricular activities, which
this
was
makes so perfect. Much sense.
So I was obviously okay. Still teaching geography, but doing the other bits of it as well. And then, lo and behold, I got a phone call going, this job's being advertised, have you seen it? Had a look at the job description, and I thought, well, spoke to my head teacher at Heels, because I was so happy at Heels. It was such an incredible school.
Yeah.
And I was like, look, I don't know what to do. And she was like, okay, you need to think with your head and your heart here, and it sounds like your dream job.
Did you go to the beach?
Yeah, I did sit down on the shingle beach and kind of rub my pebbles, thinking, what on earth am I going to do? Applied for it. The interview process was incredibly long and drawn out, and
I can
then
imagine.
Got the job. So with
like
a really heavy heart, handed my notice into Heels.
Yeah.
But that's what's so lovely, because we still have an education program, so I can still get to, you know, we've had some Heels volunteers and work experience students, you know, and we're sort of sticking in with that. But it is a dream job, because it's, you know, we're both sat here talking, you know, before the, you know, we started this, we were talking about our passion for the water. I get to show people different elements of the water and kind of say, this is what it is and this is how you could get involved. And that to me is just, it's amazing, because if we have one person that comes off the water, or one person that finishes near the, you know, we do heritage walks, we do archaeological camps over at Mount Edgecombe,
that's
which is
really
our other
cool
gateway.
What so does that involve?
Digging because in the mud, looking for things. And again, the rangers, because I obviously had the ranger service, and so my head ranger was over there with 25 children from, again, pupil premium children from different local schools, and they were working with the ships project, and they were looking for the heritage, and they were looking for past things from shipwrecks. And
can you not do an adult version?
Oh yes, yeah. Again, it's
genuinely,
and again,
I want to know more
because it was
that
a pilot project. This is something that the feedback from it was phenomenal. So all of these different ideas, and I would say anybody that has any ideas, things like that, you know, you want, come jump onto the National Marine Park website. There's a contact us bit there. Say, right, you know, this is what we want. What about this? Can we trial this out? Because we're in that really fabulous phase at the moment that I curveball my ranger team all the time. I'm literally like, right, you're going to try this week. Are we going to do this next month? And they're like, we're
they've
doing
got
what?
An exciting yeah job working with you. Yes, like, oh, gosh, what's she going to come up with
very
this
very varied. So, I mean, they're sat in the office at the moment. And then obviously this afternoon, they're going to be out setting up for Sail GP.
Yeah,
amazing. And yesterday they were up at the box all day working with the box team, because we've got a takeover of the box.
Love the box.
It's amazing.
If you've not been to the box, go to the box.
It's
free fabulous.
And there's so much to do. And it's incredible up there. And the learning room up there has been taken over by the National Marine Park. So okay, the box team are working, you know, with that kind of, just that shared message about sea creatures or heritage or education or conservation. And, you know, the heritage, I didn't even get onto the heritage strand earlier, because obviously the heritage for us, you know, look at Plymouth, look at why Plymouth is here. You know, we've got the port, we've got that beautiful natural amphitheatre, which is going to be really showcased this weekend with CellGP.
Yeah, I bet.
And it's almost, you know, all the shipwrecks that we've got here and all the different elements of it all. And that's where we're working over at the Mount Edgecombe Battery, the Garden Battery, to actually, how can we bring that to life to show people the heritage and why Plymouth is so successful as a port. So again, it's just, oh, my job is very varied, but it's...
Yeah, it's got, it sounds like it's got a big historical aspect to it. Yeah, you've got it's just
it's such a varied approach, and it's vast. It's scary at how vast it is. And every time I sit down to write a report, I either look at the geographical coverage that we've got, all the different strands that we've got, or, you know, when we look at our target audiences, I'm trying to almost not look horizontally at target audiences. I'm looking more at necessarily vertical themes or strands. So loneliness, you don't have to be old and to be lonely. You could be a teenager and be lonely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mental health, post-COVID. So there's lots of different elements to the job, which is just... It's fascinating, and every day I literally don't know whether I'm going to be out on the water, if I'm going to be in the office, if I'm going to be at a meeting, if I'm going to be working from home. It's just
so varied.
And considering this job's never existed before, it's amazing for me to come into it and kind of go, right, what's today going to be?
What would you say is the downside of the job? Is there one? Because it's sounding pretty perfect. What's your least favourite part?
I think... Obviously, being a teacher and obviously, you know, doing a degree and a postgraduate degree, I'm very used to writing reports and things like that. And I think it's knowing that if we do not target this right, if we do not get the support of Plymouth right, there's going to be no more funding. We're not going to get through that next phase. So okay. I said we're in the test and trial phase at the moment, which is a developmental phase. There's also a delivery phase. Now, the delivery phase is a five-year phase. So we're currently in the two-year developmental phase.
Okay.
After that, if we succeed in the funding, next funding bid, we get the delivery phase.
So the stakes are high, basically.
Very high. Because if we do not get this right, if we don't get, you know, feedback from people saying what they want, when they want it, how they want it, what the park means to them... If we don't show Heritage Lottery Fund that we're working towards an end goal for this, that sustainability, that, you know, the whole idea is that the whole city gets involved. Now, that could be, they could be north of the A38, up in Ernesettle, yet actually they've got a creek there. If we can encourage them to utilise the creek in a safe way, but a sustainable way, in a conservation way, in an education way, in a commercial way, in a, you know, recreational way, it doesn't matter where you are within the city, we want people to get engaged. It could be taking the mobile rock pool to a care home, because actually you've got locals there that physically can't get to the, you know, the Plymouth waterfront is a cliff at the end of the day.
Yeah.
You know, there's only so much, we're desperately trying to make an accessible route to get to the water's edge.
I was thinking about
that's
this.
Not going to happen everywhere. That might be over at Mountbatten, but it actually might, you know, how can we get people to the water's edge? In which case, if you do unfortunately live in a care home and you haven't got the mobility, then actually let's take the CTU, let's take those mobile rock pools out, let's take Oculus glasses, you know, AV and RV glasses out, and allow you to experience things.
I think that would be amazing, because the mobile rock pool, I saw it for the first time when I was at the Blue Splash, when I was working with the rock pool project, and if I had a pound for every time someone came over and said, oh, did you get all this stuff from here then? Yeah. And we were like, over
literally
there.
Right.
You can see.
20 feet away. Yeah.
And they were like, oh, I had no idea. Because when you look for the, you look at first, you can't see a lot. And then when you actually, we go through it and you can see so much. People don't know.
And I think that, you know, rock pooling, I know that, you know, I worked with a Nepalese school a few years ago and they came over on an exchange and I took two Nepalese teachers rock pooling with my children.
Wow.
And it didn't matter if you were a 50-year-old Nepalese teacher or an 8-year-old, you know, local boy, something like rock pooling is accessible for all. And when you've got the ability to do the mobile rock pool, it just shows you the diversification. And again, if we'd have spoken to Alan last year and said about a mobile rock pool, you know, or 2 years ago, he'd have been like, what? You know, this is obviously another ex-teacher as well. So I think it just shows the adaptability of it. And I think the terrific thing about the marine park trialing different things out is it can be organic, it can be fluid. You know, some of the ideas that people are giving us from this survey are like, well, what about this and what about this? And we're going, you know what? Let's give it a go.
That's hearing directly what the community want as well, isn't it? Like that is amazing. It's not just you sitting there going, we're going to do this. Yeah. It's like, okay, let's hear what people have got to say. And that's really nice, actually.
I think it's a park for the people. And I was doing some work this week with one of the consultants from Heritage Lottery Fund, and he said, mm-hmm. right, what would be the soundbite of Plymouth? If you could, what, describe a Plymouthian to me. And I was like, oh my goodness. And I thought, actually, when I'm out walking, whether it's, you know, by the sea or in a park, what, people in Plymouth do acknowledge you. You will always get a hello. And you won't know people's names. So basically, I think I surmised it with, get on, bye. Because actually, you know, a get on is a hello. A bye is a, you know, a local boy or a maid if you're a girl. And I just thought, you know, it was almost like that get on bye is just the colloquial, hello, you all right? How you doing? And yeah. I think that to me is Plymouth. I've lived in Plymouth now for 20 years. And I think it's that, it is a community, it is a small city. We need to allow people to have a say in the city. And I think people are so quick at attacking Plymouth.
Yeah, I feel like it's not really
some
on the map
proud.
Necessarily.
I
remember when I was picking my university, I spoke to a family friend and I was torn between here and Southampton. And they were like, go to Southampton, why would you go to Plymouth?
It's much nicer than Plymouth,
It's not the case, no. I don't think personally. But actually, when you get here, my auntie and uncle came at the weekend, and they came from France on the ferry, and they'd only previously driven through and seen the city centre, which I will admit is not my favourite.
No. but at the time when it was first built, Abercrombie, you know, it's for Plymouth. It was a world leader for that. Yeah.
Well, that's it. But they came, and I took them to the nice parts, the Barbican. We went to William Yard, the waterfront, all the nice bits, and they were like, actually, we didn't realise there was so much here. I made them a little book with all the best like spots to go to and things. It's an amazing city. And I think people are sick of me saying how much I love Plymouth, but it's just so
special. I think you're right.
Special.
I think it is. And I think it is so diverse. And I think this is the difference now. You know, back in the day, you know, a few years ago, you used to drive off Brittany Ferries and you drive through Mill Bay.
Yeah.
Now, Mill Bay, 10 years ago, wasn't particularly attractive. That aesthetically, it wasn't that necessarily that pleasant. And if that was your opinion of Plymouth, crikey, no wonder you don't want to have come back. I think that the redevelopment of Mill Bay now with the boulevard and all the different structures going around, and obviously this is where Sale GP is based for the weekend on Clyde Quay and the Green Quay, you know, we've got now so much more investment in Plymouth, and I think the economic development at Plymouth now, Plymouth's a place to be reckoned with.
I think it
really is going on the map. And I think, and I was talking to somebody from Destination Plymouth yesterday, and she was saying, you know what, we've got Britain's Ocean City, we are the home of the First National Marine Park, we need to kind of sell ourselves a little bit more, we need to be a little bit more proud about what we have got down here. And yes, there are going to be potholes, and yes, you know, there's certain elements of any council in any community which are negative. That's not just Plymouth, that's every single council in the country.
Absolutely.
I think what we need to do now is become unified and become a community and kind of go, this is what we can do right. This
I think
is what
we do need
smashing,
to
smashing,
yeah,
what
absolutely.
We are doing right. So this get on by, you know, it's like it's a real, to me, it's something that's really positive, it's a real community, and this to me is the aspirational future, because if we can carry on being this small city, but with a really loud voice, to say, look, this is what we're blooming good at, let's do this, but let's protect the water, let's protect our landscape, let's promote the blue, let's promote being green in the blue. You know, we've got the first electric boat charging pontoons in the country. We've got,
I didn't even know that was a thing.
They're popping up. Yeah, they're at down at Commercial Wharf, down at the Barbican, and also
really?
Over at Mountbatten. Sorry, at Yacht Haven, I believe it is. Don't quote me on that.
Okay.
So again, you know, we have got green charging points around. We have got, you know, there are refillable water bottle stations being put into different capabilities and different locations, and I think we. And, you know, looking out the window now, we're so close to the sea, yet it's green. So we, you know, we're talking about putting some of the coastal paths in, on some of the land-based paths in, that we can actually link a green mind with a blue mind, so that you can merge between the two. So it's like a turquoise city,
isn't there? Turquoise. Quote, you heard it first, everyone.
Turquoise city.
I was going to say, oh, isn't there some rewilding going on?
Yes, there is.
I have seen, I'm really excited about that. I want to look into it a bit more. But yeah, rewilding of the city centre.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's...
That's exciting.
It's quite funny because a lot of people have been complaining about the No Mow May and the fact that it's still going. Yet actually, we know about biodiversity now. We know, unless you're a hay fever sufferer, and I am that.
me too. Yeah. It's horrendous.
No, I've been on Teams meetings with my team, which is actually within environmental planning, and it's the green teams that are there. And they're kind of going, right, you know, the bee surveys and the rewilding surveys. And, you know, I'm loving the fact now they're almost trimming the edges, so you can see that they're purposely leaving the centre verges long because of biodiversity.
So I've seen on campus they have signs now saying, bees, we're not just doing this to be lazy, we're doing it to try and repollinate and blah.
And I did it. I mean, I did No Mow May at home, and my children were very much like, can we leave it, please, Mum? Because there's flowers in the garden that we never knew existed before. And it's just like, actually, yeah, I did eventually cut it, I think, at the end of June.
It's got to get to a point.
Really and again, it was hay fever based. But it was very much the state of, actually, I think the city is thinking sustainably. They are thinking of the future. So that encompassed with the National Marine Park, just, it's a really exciting place to be.
It is. This conversation has made me really proud. I'm like, this is where I live.
I think this is what we need to do. And again, you know, from me doing my geography degree and then doing my postgrad, thinking, oh, you know, I'll just do this. And then look at me now, and I'm 45 and I'm in a job which didn't exist a couple of years ago. And I don't know where I'm going to be in 5 years' time. Blooming hope it's still in the Marine Park, because it's a really full-on job, and it's very strategic, but it's also really varied. And the Ranger Service, which obviously, you know, the team that I work with are just incredible. And we've got a real
passionate
mixed
people.
Bag. Yeah, we've got, and again, we've got people that have, the head ranger, Sam, he's just come back from South Georgia. So he was in the Falklands before he was here. Before that, he was working in the Seychelles. So, you know, he's given up the Falklands, and he's given up Seychelles to come and work
for Little Plymouth.
First ever National Marine Parks head ranger.
Wow.
And his team as well, again, just diverse and just varied. And it's just, I think it's so many people have necessary jobs that they might just sit at a screen all day, which is mostly my job, unfortunately.
I was going to say, I bet you've got a lot of time.
When I get out there,
that.
It's just like, right, let's hit this hard. And I think it's just that variety of, and again, these jobs didn't exist. You know, we recruited these jobs after Christmas. So it's still a very new thing. So it's going to be fascinating, I think, for people to follow the pathway of the Marine Park. If we can get through the next level of funding, if we can come sustainable, if we can actually build. We had 32 volunteers at Big Blue at the weekend.
Yeah, I saw loads
in their
of people
yellow
in
t-shirts.
Yeah, I know. I got mistaken for a member of staff at one point because I was wearing the Rockpool t-shirt, which is a very similar colour.
Yeah. And I mean, fabulous. 32 people in Plymouth volunteered to give their time.
Yeah.
And what, for the sake of a t-shirt and a baseball cap? And of those 32, we spoke to them. We were like, look, would you be prepared to come? Yes, we would.
Yeah. Because it was a good day, though.
Yeah.
You're interacting with people.
And again, it was that education. It was the conservation. It was the commerce. It was, you know, we had different people. We had some mariners, retired some mariners there. We had some refugees that were volunteering because they wanted to pay forward what they'd experienced. And they wanted to. And I just think, you know, even our volunteers were diverse. So I just think this, the future of the Moon Park, I just can't wait to see what happens. I really can't. So exciting.
So diverse that there were seagulls.
Yes. Oh, they were brilliant.
They were fabulous.
They came down from Bristol.
Yeah. But just FYI, everyone. Yeah. They were people dressed in seagull outfits. But when I say they weren't just dressed walking around, they were squawking. They were trying to steal people's ice cream.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were amazing.
There was one lady eating fish, and she was eating chips by the pool at Lido. And one seagull clicked her head really quickly to look at the lady. With that, the other seagull clocked what she was doing, so she did the same. And then they literally crept, like, millimetre by millimetre, getting closer and closer. And their mannerisms were so incredible.
They were bird-like.
They were. Oh, I'm going to get those guys back.
Please.
For every,
they were so much fun. People were getting pictures with them.
Yeah. They raided loads of interviews for like Plymouth Live were doing interviews, and they kept on going back and taking part in the interviews, and they were on the electric bikes that we had on the hoe. And
I want them on the podcast.
They were just
squawking.
And the noises, because I did actually speak to them and I was like, how did you learn those noises? And I think, you know, the mine bit from Nemo was and they were just, and I think that's interestingly, I think it's that cultural link. You know, people in Plymouth do not like seagulls.
No, they're horrendous.
You know, they can be a real issue with regards to attacking people, nicking your food.
Yet one dropped seagulls, a dead pigeon on me the other day.
No.
I know. Gosh. I was thinking
it's like pleasant.
I know.
But again, I think the barriers that were broken down by these two middle-aged women, grown, you know, dressed as seagulls.
Were they actresses or something?
They're street performers.
Ah, I see. I was going to say, because they weren't just...
They were absolutely incredible. And again, I think it's, you know, having that kind of... We had, obviously, the Barbican Theatre was along with their jellyfish, but I think the fisherman couldn't come. It was too windy, and the mermaid got a bit windswept. But the jellyfish that was walking along, and again, it was just...
I don't think I saw the jellyfish.
Oh, they were up on the Saturday. So again, it was just allowing people to realise that there can be some really positive elements from you know, what we're saying is, you know, we're not saying that seagulls are necessarily negative. People can have some bad relationships with them, but those seagulls being there at the weekend, even in, as you know,
it was comical,
dressed, was perfect. It worked really, really well.
And they also you also had the lifeguards, the two lifeguards on stilts.
Oh yeah,
were they?
They were linked to the same guys. So again, that was terrific. And
they were
just
funny.
And just linking to the lifeguards as well. Obviously, we had Coast to Coast water safety team that came down.
Right.
And you know, we've already mentioned that Plymouth doesn't have any lifeguards. We had these lifeguards, this actual water safety team in the water all weekend.
Yeah.
And it provided people with such a level of security blanket.
It's just knowing that they're there.
They were incredible.
Yeah.
They were they were on rescue boards. They had a boat. We had a spotter on shore. They ended up dealing with an incident further along down by the Corinthian, which actually wasn't anything to do with the Big Blue, but they dealt with it.
Yeah.
The reason that anything happened with the Big Blue was that the deputy harbour master, the Queen's harbour master, was actually really happy that we'd brought in an outside agency to do water safety, to support the current team that we had poolside and obviously at Mountbatten.
That could be the reason that someone gets in though.
Exactly. They did a swim from Tinside Cove to Rusty Ridge at the waterfront and back again. It's a 1.3-kilometre swim.
Mm-hmm.
We had some people that travelled down from Bude to come and do it because we had a water safety team present.
Yeah.
So that, the feedback from that, through that, you know, the evaluation that I just mentioned, that has not gone unnoticed.
Mm-hmm.
So we're now looking at budgeting for lifeguards. We're looking for, you know, local companies that might want to sponsor a lifeguard.
Would that be all year round? Because
that's the difficulty, because it wouldn't be a typical, you know, from swimming down at Firestone. Firestone isn't necessarily busy during the day. It is during the school holidays, but actually Firestone's busy from 7 o'clock in the morning to about 9.
Yeah, that's...
And then the same again in the evenings.
In the evenings.
So if we did have a lifeguard service in Plymouth, we're also looking at high tides. We're also looking at peak times. We're also looking at actually split shifts, because it wouldn't be a whole 10 until 6 like Arnoli beaches, for example, are.
It's a lot to consider.
So hence the logistics of that at the moment, and also the budgeting restraints that we've got, but whether actually we put ownership of it to local businesses or further, you know, or out there to say, you know, did you want to sponsor a lifeguard for your local beach? A lot of companies now, businesses have social values that they have to kind of fulfill, so it could be something like that. You know, it could be buying rescue tubes for the lifeguards, because these are like £40 a pop for a rescue tube.
Yeah,
actually, if we've got 5 lifeguarded or 5 designated bathing area beaches, what can we actually do to get the right equipment on mm-hmm. those beaches? So there's an awful lot, and again, linking into the job, it's things like, you know, 1 minute I can be talking to the neighbourhood community forum mm-hmm. up at the bowling club on a Monday night talking about the park,
because
they're statutory body, and the next minute I'm trying to work out how to pay for, you know, rescue tubes for lifeguards.
Yeah.
So it's,
I bet
really
you meet a
varied
lot of different people.
Oh,
so you're
yes.
with kids, students.
Yes, yes. Everybody. Yeah.
Companies.
It's my stakeholder portfolio is getting bigger and bigger, because to me, you're a stakeholder. Anybody listening to this is a stakeholder. They are just as important as the big businesses, because actually this is a park for the people. So there's no point of me being a hierarchical snob and kind of going, oh, I only want to talk to CEOs of business. No, thank you. I need to talk to Joe Bloggs that walks their dog down there.
Well, that's the thing. At the events, you are speaking to everyone. That's what I noticed. And I thought, this is why I wanted you on the podcast, because you're so approachable. You're speaking to everyone. And you did.
It's important. There's no point of me putting a part forward as a free diver or as a stand-up paddleboard instructor or as a power boater. I need to put a part forward that's of everybody's values and appreciation and ethos. And I think it's that community engagement and that community inclusion that I am passionate about, because actually I blooming love the water. You know, the water is my life. But if it can be to somebody who's neither appreciated that it could be to them yet or to how to get to it, then heck, I'm not doing my job properly. So hence why it's important. I was talking to a little boy yesterday up at Dylan, up at the box, and he was creating a starfish to stick on the box wall.
Amazing.
And I said, why have you picked a starfish? And he was like, well, they're really good because they can live in the water and they can live out of the water. And he had such a focus on this one particular creature. And it just was like, yeah, you know, if we could now physically take you down to the beach and show you a starfish in its natural habitat, rather than, or we'll signpost you first to the aquarium because you can learn about it and then take you down to the beach, or, you know, and who's to say that Dylan isn't going to go on and become some kind of
starfish expert,
starfish pro, who can cultivate people's passion in starfish. And this, you know, Dylan was, what, 6 years old, and I had such a good time with Dylan yesterday that I just think, you know, that to me is important, and that to me is what is so amazing about this job.
What's interesting about your job is that I feel like you're making changes on different scales. So you're looking at a big change long term, we're talking across the whole of Plymouth, and then looking at small individuals, like a child that's had a bad time, and that there's probably not another job like that that covers so much scope.
No, definitely not possibly water-based. I think you're right, and I think this is what's so challenging about it, because something as the National Heritage Lottery Fund, they need quite a prescriptive plan. So they're looking at a 5-year plan for us to implement, etc., etc. And yet, when you talk to them about this, they're like, actually, the fact that it is so fluid, the fact that it is so organic, the fact that... And there was another little boy yesterday, Saxon, who was talking to me. What Saxon told me, I came home yesterday and put into a plan, because actually that can be implemented for next week when we're up at the box. And it's like, actually, how do we forward think to 5, 6, 7, 20, 30 years time, yet still keep it real to now? There's no point of me taking on X amount of people's responses and rolling with 1,000 people's responses, when actually I want 200,000 people's responses, and actually those, you know, 50,000 people that I hear from now might already be the mobilized. I need to hear the mobilized responses, but I also need to hear the ones that haven't engaged.
Okay.
So it's almost like a differentiated approach.
Yeah.
So it's a very interesting, my hat's kind of changed, I think, almost depending on who I'm talking to and where I am.
Yeah, pitching things differently.
Yeah, they have to be, and it has to be accessible, which is what I know, you know, some of the surveys that have gone out, people have been like, oh, these kind of questions, or who are you talking to? They're asking for opinions, and look at the language. We've done it like that purposely.
We have actually had feedback like that.
Unfortunately, and some of them were from people that are very engaged in the water already, which is, so they're wondering why we're asking these quite simple based, well, they're baseline data core questions. And obviously, you know, doing your degree, you know that you have to start with a baseline.
Yeah, absolutely.
These are our baseline questions. So it's been quite interesting to say to people that you might understand what that this is, but actually somebody else may not.
Well, as I was saying before, it's easy to forget when you're so involved in the water that some people aren't, and they might not do this, that and the other. It is easy to forget, actually. So it's amazing that you're
trying to quite interesting broad scale. But yeah, no, it is terrific, and it's just a cracking job. Absolutely blooming love it. I mean, I'm sat here now with flip-flops on because I know I'm going to be getting wet, you know, this afternoon after we're setting up for sale GP.
yeah
um you know, one day I'll rock up in, you know, quite suited and booted, and the next day I'll literally, I'll rock up to work in neoprene because, you know, I've got to go straight out to do something.
That's amazing.
So that's what I love about it as well. It's just the different elements of it, and it's just the variety. And I would just, and I think it's, you know, yes, take a risk. I was very, very fortunate that I was so lucky to have my family's backing when I first left teaching.
Yeah.
And then the second time I left teaching, I obviously had my head teacher's backing. But I do, I don't know, has COVID taught us that life's too short? Have I had to cut my cloth when I quit teaching? Yes, I did. You know, economically, it changed the car that I drove, it changed where I lived, it changed the food that I ate.
It comes back to what's important.
Yeah.
And you have to weigh it up. Work-life
balance. And I think, you know, I'm so fortunate that I can come to work some days and my children come with me.
How old are your children?
I've got a 13-year-old and a 16-year-old.
Nice.
Fortunately, the 16-year-old's a qualified lifeguard. So, wow. You know, if there's certain things that I need, you know, she was helping out. She's just done Duke of Edinburgh Silver Award. So she was my volunteer for DOV.
Wow.
So I could get her with me. And also my son at 13. Children are really good play activators. You know, my son's not got any tickets and any accreditation for anything because obviously his age. But actually putting him in a pool with children that were nervous of the water, he was patient. He was encouraging. He was, let's just sit here and splash, shall we?
It's nice for the kids as well to have a peer.
Yeah. Yeah, completely.
Doing it instead of an adult.
Yeah.
I think that's nice.
Which was so lovely because we ended up then, a couple of more of the team actually brought their children down to the events to act as like play instigators, to play activators. And yes, again, you're right, you know, that some of the adults stayed on shore and then the children were getting involved. And I just think that in itself is, you know, you don't think of a job like this, you know, being a manager as being a particularly family-friendly job. Yet, there's elements that it can be, which is again, it's just amazing. So again, it's just really varied. That's what I love about it.
It's nice that they get involved in your job and, you know, your daughter's lifeguarding. That's pretty amazing. Yeah. That's something to be proud of.
Yeah.
And your son's probably not far behind.
Hopefully. He might be, he's more of a gamer, more of a computer.
Yeah.
But again, he can come up with some of the apps that we're going to have on water safety and the digital elements of the park. So, I'm setting some homework. If you want tea tonight, I need you to think about this particular coding element for me, please. So
you want some ice cream?
Yes, yeah. Come up with this plan for me. So, yeah, no, it's lovely. And the team I work with are just incredible. So
what really can students be doing to get involved in all this? Because there'll be students coming to Plymouth.
Yes.
I've been speaking to a few that are coming in September, and current students will want to get involved. Yeah. How can people do it? Because it sounds like it's too good to not tap into.
Yeah, absolutely. We've just trialled, working with the university, we've just trialled micro-internships. So we've just taken on 4 micro-interns. Who gave us 40 hours of their time.
Amazing.
And we took these under the Ranger Service. So when I was looking through the CVs of who to appoint, it was very much marine-based disciplines, but with people that had done Duke of Edinburgh, they'd done guiding, scouting, VSO, because we really wanted them to be out meeting and greeting, working with the public. There's a winter internship as well. Winter for us is going to be very data driven, very digital context. So again, my approach to recruiting interns is not going to be the marine base necessarily. It's going to be more of the psychology side of things, the more of the data representation and marketing to an extent. So I'm going to trial like a different types of interns. However, the volunteers, again, the people that I was looking through to choose their internships, I honestly, when I started volunteering and I was 15, and I think when you can see, you know, you're here as a volunteer doing this, and I think if you can see that people are engaged and passionate and are prepared to give an hour, half an hour, you know, 2 hours of their time, that is a big wealth in that. So we can be, we do have a recruitment database.
And it's not just for marine biologists, which is amazing. And that's something I didn't realise.
Yeah, we can say, because if you know, to an extent, obviously, me being a geographer, you know, did my degree in geography and now, you know, I'm the manager of the marine park. So it doesn't, and again, yes, I'm passionate about the water, but I've got no qualifications in any kind of marine science or anything like that. So yeah, it can be across the board. It can be hospitality, it can be marketing, it can be media, it can be data, it can be psychology and sociology, it can be, you know, it really can be so vast. And I think when you look at the Ranger team, not only for their community engagement but also the strategic side of things that I work on, yeah, if you anybody wanted to get involved with any of the volunteering,
yeah,
contact the website and just do the contact us bit on the website and just ask you to put onto the volunteering database, and we'll kind of just start discussions. But obviously there's work experiences, there's, you know, we are looking down at the apprenticeship route, in the development stage, sorry, the delivery phase if we get through to it, but we are looking at, you know, more of these micro internships and internships, because I think that for a future employer is,
yeah,
is amazing. And I think credit to the ones that we've just had, the four university students that we've just had from the micro internships, they were worth their weight in gold.
Yeah,
what they brought to the team was incredible, and it's new ideas and it's new approaches and
different fresh outlook as,
yeah,
well.
Completely.
Yeah, as a student, yeah. And
so, yeah. And I guess they were across, you know, oceanography to marine biology and marine science.
But it was nice for them to get involved in where they live as well, yeah, and do something they love, outreach stuff, and that's
so it has
really
been
cool.
It's, yeah, so I would just say for anybody that wants to get involved, whether it's students or anybody, you know, just drop us a line on their website and just, you know, say it could be somebody that goes out diving who wants to keep an eye on the seabeds for us. It could be somebody that's actively involved with, you know, Firestone Bay or any of the water spots, because we've obviously got community access points as well as the big hubs and bigger gateways. But it could be somebody that, you know, is passionate about water safety or has an idea that they just want to trial out. It can, you know, the whole podcast thing, it's good, things like that. We've also got, you know, the website. Have you, you know, what should we have on the website? Are you somebody that thinks, actually, why don't you put that directly on the website? Brilliant. If we, you know, if we haven't thought of it, tell us,
yeah,
you know, be part of this park in the sea that belongs to the people. So yeah, no, please, anybody that wants to get involved at all, just drop us an email and it'll be picked up by the Horizons team and we will be in contact with you.
That's fabulous. Well, thank you very much for the chat.
Pleasure.
About it.
It's been
really nice hearing about the park and I'm really excited. I want to get more involved, yay, in it myself. We're just going to wrap up with Creature of the Week. Creature of the Week. Exciting. So are you feeling...
I'm nervous about this. Yeah. I told you I was nervous about
this. I was
going to
say, how are you feeling? Confident?
Knowing that I'm come from a geography background and not from a maritime background and a marine background, I'm a little bit nervous, so yes.
Just think about the mobile rock pool.
Oh, okay.
Think about the mobile rock pool. You find these organisms all over the marine park in the rock pools. They live on the low shore.
Okay.
They rarely retract their tentacles. Like the other ones of this
so
type
the anemones
of thing.
Retract, so it's not an anemone, or it is an anemone? It is an
it's
anemone.
It's a type
of
anemone.
An anemone.
You've already guessed an anemone, so I'd say that's a win.
Yay!
I'd say that's a win.
I was so afraid that I was embarrassing myself in this.
No, absolutely not. Well, the last one was green tentacles with pink at the tips. You might have seen those ones.
Oh, yes, because people were...
The green, and they keep their tentacles out.
Long snake.
Lock
snake.
No, snake lock.
Snake lock. Green with, so the green because they're like snakes.
I don't know, because there's also like a brown version of snake lock, but they've got pink at the end, and that's what.
So they're the pretty ones.
Yeah, pretty.
Right.
But you got it right, because you said an enemy straight away.
Oh, I see, that's okay then.
There we go.
Oh, I'm going to have to really pay attention a bit.
No,
week.
We've got
the rock pool at guys this weekend. So
you know what? I'm used to having marine biologists on here, so I didn't
they
even.
Get it all the time.
I need to probably rethink Creature of the Week for people,
yeah,
that aren't.
No.
Yeah.
That's all, yeah. Jellyfish.
I could have
done the jellyfish. I could have
made you. Well, do you want to do it again?
No, all done. Oh,
thank you so much. Hi everyone. I hope you enjoyed that episode talking to Tors and learning all about the marine park. I was really surprised actually when we were having that chat how much is going on. So yeah, if you want to get involved with marine park, all of the information and contact details will be on the social media pages and in the description of the episode. But in the meantime, stay safe and keep an eye out for all of the amazing things that's going on here in the Ocean City.